Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. There's a great deal to talk about with our guest this hour, Nancy Grasmick, State Superintendent of our public schools. Nancy, welcome. Good to have you in the studios once again.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Mark.
How many years have you been superintendent now?
18.
18. Almost as longer than I've been on the air. 17 for me, 18 for you. Number here is 410-319-8888 to join in on this conversation with Nancy Grasmick. Please do. Many of you are really concerned about our schools, no matter where you're hearing this conversation, whether you're in Cecil County, Harford County, Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Howard County, down in Prince George's County, Montgomery County, and Arundel County. You all have concerns about our schools, and you can join us here now. We've heard they're going to take huge cuts in the state legislature. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. We'll talk about that and many other issues facing our schools, and want you to join us here for a conversation with Nancy Grasmick at 410-319-8888. She'll be here for the next 45 minutes or so. Then she has to go to another meeting, and we will be joined after that by Vincent Thomas, who is professor of dance at Towson. A really interesting conversation, but that comes after this conversation. Before I start anything, I have to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community to prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. Nancy, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's talk about it. There's a lot to talk about here. Let me begin, though, by talking about what happened, I think it was yesterday.
Actually, it was on Monday.
Monday, that Mike Bowler wrote about it, who used to be the education correspondent for The Sun, and called it an unusual love fest on the steps of the courthouse. It was you and the judge and Dr. Alonzo, and the end of the decree took place that day, and it's been on for 26 years.
Correct.
So talk a bit about what happened and what this – give our listeners a short history and then talk about this.
The short history is that 26 years ago, the Maryland Disability Law Center, filing on behalf of students who have disabilities and were not receiving services from the Baltimore City Public Schools, filed this suit. And it has continued for 26 years because there has not been evidence presented to the court that things had improved sufficiently in terms of those students receiving services in a timely way for the judge to say we can reach some level of settlement and transition the responsibility for the case in the sense of students receiving services to the State Department of Education, where we do the monitoring for every school system in that regard. So finally, after a lot of tough negotiations, and that included the plaintiffs, the Maryland Disability Law Center, and certainly the court was involved through a special master who'd been assigned to the case. We reached agreement that objectives had been set forth, and for the most part, those objectives had been met. And so the judge was confident that we could now begin to transition to the oversight of the state. And we will have a fairness hearing, which the judge feels is necessary for any parties to come to the federal court on April 19th and express either pleasure with the settlement or concern. So that will be sort of the final step, and the judge will make his statements following that fairness hearing.
Now, as I said to you, I've been covering this for 17 years. You've been dealing with it for 18 as the head of our state school system. And for 17 years, I've been covering it, and through a lot of superintendents of the public school system, I remember Walter Amprey, who is a friend of mine, who was head of our school system, was under the courts were going to fine him $150 a day because they didn't think he was answering the question and reforming our special ed system. I remember you had a close relationship with the next superintendent, and you and she really fell out over this issue. And it was very tough. So the question is, after 26 years, and I want to talk to Andres Alonso about this as well, what happened? I mean, what happened under Andres Alonso's tenure from your perspective that ended this judicial, pedagogical, political stalemate?
Well, I think there were two things that happened. One, I felt Dr. Alonso came in with a deep commitment to not only settling the case, but ensuring that the students had the necessary services. But I think the second part of it was we had a very dramatic federal court hearing about 2005. And at that time, there was a lot of discussion about whether or not the system ought to be the special education part of it ought to be placed in a receivership. And we did not feel that there were bright lines where you could really separate out that piece of the school system from all other pieces. We recommended a team of people chosen from systems around the state of Maryland to literally go into that system and work side by side with a corresponding person. So transportation, curriculum, human resources, finance, so that we could build capacity within the system to address these issues and work together. And in 1994, I had volunteered the state as a defendant in this case because I felt we had responsibility to ensure the students would receive services. So that team went in there. It was remarkable what happened in terms of forging relationships, a level of trust, building that capacity within the system. And then Dr. Alonzo came in. He supported the team. He was dedicated. He became very knowledgeable about the case. And every meeting, he had a presence there to say, okay, are we doing better? What are our legitimate deficiencies here? And so I think it was the combination of factors.
So, but what was, I'm just curious, I'm just, very concretely, I mean, what changed? What is, besides, I mean, there, people have tried coordination on all those issues for a long time.
But not to that extent and not with that
what
depth.
What does to that extent mean?
Extent means he rolled up his sleeves. He got in there. He said, who's not getting services? He spoke to every principal. He said, this is a top priority of this system. I want to know when in X school these students are not getting services. Students who weren't transported to school for days at a time. He said, that's unacceptable. We have to ensure that those school children are in on those buses and in school on time. So he dug down into every dimension of the functioning of the system. And he had a high level of respect. And the final thing that happened was our deputy for special education in the state, he called me and said, this person, I have seen her work. She's outstanding. Can I hire her in the city school system? And I gave her up to head special education in Baltimore City.
So Baltimore now controls special ed again.
Yes, and the monitoring that we do will be the same monitoring we do for every other system in the state of Maryland.
I'm going to talk about the school system at large here in a minute, but I think that Andres Alonzo has been on the show many times since he's become CEO of our city school system, and we've asked him pretty tough questions. We've gone at it a few times, but he likes doing that anyway.
Yeah, he does.
He does. But I would say that in the years I've been covering education in Baltimore City, this has been an amazing time these last 3 years watching the transformation of our schools. There's been a lot of criticism, though, about closing of schools. There are a lot of people, leaders in the community, leaders in the African-American community especially, who have been upset about closing schools in the city and thinking that's been an assault on our kids and on communities. I mean, so things haven't been smooth, but also watching the changes in the system has been pretty remarkable.
I think it's quite remarkable, and I have to say our relationship at the State Department with Dr. Alonzo is outstanding, and he has a high level of sense of collaboration with us. He is accepting of any criticism. He wants to improve the system, and every action he takes, I think, is to build a better school system for the students of Baltimore City.
Nancy Grassman is our guest. She is our state superintendent of public schools in Maryland. 410-319-8888. We'd love to hear from you, teachers, parents, concerned citizens about our education system in the state. Lots being debated in Annapolis now about the future of education. We're going to talk about that. 410-319-8888 is the number, and we look forward to having you be part of this conversation with Nancy Grasmick. She'll be with us for the next half an hour or so, and we want you to be part of this conversation. 410-319-8888. So Governor Martin O'Malley has a Education Reform Act being debated in Annapolis.
Correct.
You seem to be on very different paths than the governor at the beginning, but you seem to have convinced the governor that your way was – the best way. Because clearly this act that he put forth has a lot of Nancy Grasmick in it and the ideas that she put forth in the beginning. But let's talk about this, though. I mean, there's a lot of controversy in this. I mean, this act would extend by a year teachers getting tenure in the school system.
Correct.
Right? This would connect student performance to teacher evaluation and provide extra pay for quality teachers who go to low-performing schools and who go to math and other subjects.
Correct.
So let's talk about those. I mean, there are a lot of people who think that some of these ideas are a little too over the top, and they're still towards teaching for the test, still towards the old notes I left behind, and have more to do with regulation than better teaching. Let's talk about these things.
Let me talk about the genesis of all of this.
Please, yeah.
The federal government is offering an opportunity of $4 billion for states to apply for something called Race to the Top. And basically, it's using dollars as a catalyst for what they're considering to be educational reform. The magnitude of this is huge because it's not going to relate only to this amount of money. It's going to relate to all future amounts of money the federal government will give you. And so things that were formula-driven are no longer going to be formula-driven. They will be competitive. That means that unless you make some of these changes, you will not be in a position to be competitive for these dollars. So in thinking about this and how Maryland could take another wave of reform, as I call it, thinking that the first one was Walter Sondheim, the second one was a visionary panel, and this would be the third one. And frankly, we have underperforming schools that have been underperforming for years. And that's something that the new U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, has said. It is no longer acceptable to have chronically underperforming schools. We have to ensure that the major responsibility of a teacher is to move a child forward, not an arbitrary standard, but a growth measure for that particular child, and that needs to be a part of the teacher's evaluation. And then finally, I think many of us feel teaching is complex. People often say to me, is it an art or a science? I say it's a science done artfully. And we're asking a lot of new teachers, and often they're the ones put in the most challenging schools. So we need to give them mentors, but we need to provide time for them to really grow up in their profession.
Now, there's some things I really want to probe here about that. I mean, there are some questions that many people have, and I want to see your response to them. I'm very curious also to your response to the closing of the school in Rhode Island.
Yes.
And the push towards a national curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get to those two issues, but out of fairness, I say ask people to call in. Let's get to a few callers, and then I want to come back to those two questions, 410-319-8888. Eric in Northeast, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. Eric, your phone is really – you there? Go ahead.
Let me just take off my speakerphone.
That's great. Thank you.
Yes, good evening,
good evening.
To you and your guest, Nancy Grasmick.
Thank you.
Yes, I happen to have read a couple of months ago about a data system that the Maryland State Department of Education appears to be purchasing. And that data system, I believe I read, was supposed to align the State Department of Education with the academic progress of each district in our state. Could you speak about that a little bit more and how the state is trying to link into data for each school district and maybe keep some type of a tracking of the performances of academic improvement?
Yes, thank you very much for the question, because it leads into one of the major issues on this national agenda, and that is that each state should have a longitudinal data system. We already have an individual student identifier. We have a teacher identifier, and that this data system should permit us to look at our students not only while they're in kindergarten through grades 12, but also into higher education and into the world of work and the military. And so to be able to answer questions, are we doing the right thing to prepare these students for higher education? How are they progressing once they get there? What are the problems they're experiencing? How many of those students drop out of higher education, et cetera? So answering all of these questions, and in my opinion, a very important and critical part is looking at data on individual students so we can provide interventions at every level. So we haven't purchased this system, but this summer the governor appointed a task force to design the system, and that is now a bill pending in Annapolis about a very robust system that would provide for this longitudinal data.
Eric, I'm glad you joined the show once again. It's always a pleasure to hear your thoughts. You're very sharp on these technology issues in our school. 410-319-8888. Let's get a couple more calls in here. We'll come back to some other issues. Lawrence, you're on the air.
Yes. I would like to know what is being done to infuse in the curriculum some kind of studies that would deal with the impact that drug addiction has on the children who are going to school, because that produces a myriad of problems both emotionally and psychologically for the kids. And I'm wondering how the state is planning to address that, which might be particularly acute in the inner city areas.
Thank you very much for the question. We have been receiving dollars in terms of our drug-free schools, which require that we have a curriculum that's infused in our elementary schools and then in middle school, and less so in high school, although it is present in high school. And that is to present students with the dangers, particularly early on, the dangers of drug and alcohol use, and ensuring that they have the facts about the the dimensions of this in terms of their health. So I would have to say that I think it has been less than hugely successful with our students.
I'm sorry. I think one of the things Lawrence was trying to point to, what are you doing for the children of parents who may be drug addicted who are inside our school system, addressing their needs, which are different, which are pretty special?
Well, I'm sorry if I didn't interpret that correctly, but I do think that we have social workers. Many more schools today are seen as the sort of hub of the community with health services, social services, and they expand beyond the children to the adults. And so I think that we're using our counselors to make those appropriate referrals for families so that those families can be directed to assistance, which hopefully then will benefit the children. So we're trying to ensure that our students understand the dangers of drugs, but then also attempting to work with the families by way of referrals. We have a number of school health centers now in the state of Maryland, and they're actually geared not to the children, but to the adults in terms of coming in and asking for that kind of help. So we're referring to the appropriate agencies for assistance for these families. And is it enough? I don't think it is enough. But I think we've made some giant steps with these wellness centers.
Lawrence, thanks for your call. Let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. And DeConti, who's, I think, special ed teacher, is on the line. You're on the air.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Yes, thanks for allowing me to say this. Well, I'm a special ed teacher, and what I've been thinking about, now as the state moves into, rewarding teachers, for having, for having their students to pass the MSA, I'm thinking, what's the most fair way that this can be, instituted? Because as a special educator, I have some of my kids, who are absent from school like 4 to 5 times a month. Okay, and then I have friends that teach kids that, half of the class don't speak English very, very proficiently. Okay. So, are there, going to be, some kind of fair formula, you know, that we who work with these kids that have these unique issues. And, you know, the last thing is, you know, I think the most fairest way to do this is to have a pre and a post test. You know, the kid come in the first week, we test them. Last week of school, you know, we test them. I mean, you know, instead of, you know, depending on the MSA, because, you know, some kids, you know, are not in school all year. Some kids come in, you know, after the Christmas break. You know, can you address those, you know, those special unique issues?
I certainly would like to, and I'd like to address your last issue. In the proposal from the federal government, it doesn't talk about an absolute standard. It talks about exactly what you said. Where is the child when you receive the child, and then where is the child at the end of that period? And the growth factor, and that's what it's called, a growth factor, really takes into account that baseline information that you've indicated is so important and so fair in terms of the growth. So that's how the plan is going to be developed. And all of the assessments will change. This growth factor will be defined very specifically so we understand it. But it is that idea. On the other issue of special education and English limited language students, we find ourselves in a very difficult position. And you're absolutely right. The unique needs of these students, and we have far too few teachers. So I want to express my thanks to you for being willing to do this and interact with our students with disabilities. But when we're saying that there ought to be compensation, we are asking each individual school system, and we're conducting focus groups with teachers to say, how should this look to you? Who are the people who ought to be rewarded? I can't imagine that a plan would develop that wouldn't reward teachers who teach children with disabilities and those who are English language learners. So thank you. I think we're on the same page in terms of your comments.
Let's get another call in here. 410-319-8888. David in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple friends of mine that are mentors in Baltimore County. My question is, there's a rumor going around that they're going to be cutting down the mentors around 50% to 60%. And the other question was, the one particular friend of mine that's a mentor said that he's used a lot as a substitute, and he can't get around to the new teachers that he's supposed to be mentoring.
Well, let me say that I don't know what is planned for Baltimore County. I think each system is dealing with some of these budget cuts in different ways. And so there's no question that the economy has impacted some of the dollars going to the local school systems because local government has been cut. The governor has tried very hard to compensate for that with the federal stimulus money by sending that in to fill in the holes that have existed from the state budget cuts. But each system is dealing with their plans for next year in a different way. And at the moment, the funding is uncertain, and it won't be certain until the General Assembly concludes. And there are huge concerns in the General Assembly at this time, although this state has valued education very highly. I think you might remember the Thornton Commission putting $1.3 billion additional dollars into public education. So there's a certain uncertainty about what's going to happen next year.
David, thanks so much for your call. That uncertainty, I mean, Thornton was great. It did a lot for the state. There's no question about that in our schools. But it was an unfunded mandate.
Yes.
And now those chickens are coming home to roost. So, and because money is just disintegrating before our eyes when it comes to the state budget. So what do you think is going to happen in the state legislature with funding for schools? How much are schools going to lose?
I'm not sure that schools, the school budget per se, is going to lose a lot. The way it's going to be accomplished, I guess, in terms of the economy, is that the state pays part of the bill for public education and the local jurisdiction pays part of the bill. And the wealthier the jurisdiction, the less state money they get. So Baltimore City gets a huge amount.
Now, do you think Montgomery County's political the delegation is going to stand for that?
Well, they get less now. That's a reality.
That is reality, but getting even less than they're getting.
Well, and this is the problem. So what I think is probably going to happen is that the funding is going to be cut to local government. That cut is going to be passed along to school systems in terms of the local contribution. The other issue that is looming very front and center is the one of teacher retirement. And the state pays all of teacher retirement now. And so if a local school system decides to raise salaries, the commensurate retirement costs accrue to the state. There's no cap on that. And so some of the discussion is, should some of that be passed along to local government? That would then be passed along in terms of the operating budget of the local school systems.
I mean, there's only so much. This can only go so far before it kind of implodes, it seems to me. I mean, the teachers, and I'm not saying they shouldn't have it. Teachers have a very good retirement system in terms of the money they get every year, the percentage of salary they get, plus health benefits. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have it.
Yes.
But if it goes back to the localities, they can start losing it.
That's correct. They can, because there's going to be more sensitivity, I think, to any increases in salary, et cetera. And we've heard what's happened in Kansas City, where they're closing half of the schools because of the financial situation.
If that's a bellwether for the rest of the country, we're in trouble.
We're in huge trouble because in our Constitution in the state of Maryland, public education is the second highest priority of the Constitution of this state. It is only the first priority is a balanced budget. So you can see what the interplay here is. But it is the highest priority of our Constitution.
And the right to education is not a U.S. constitutional right. So this is really very dangerous, what's happening in America to our schools.
Very, very significant.
We're going to take a short break and come right back. 410-319-8888. April in Columbia, you're the next caller up. And as we return, we're going to jump into the Education Reform Act and hear Nancy Grasmick's take on that. We're going to talk about some of the issues in there. Look at what happened in Rhode Island. The educational thing of Diane Ravitch is thinking about that if we have time. We'll talk about the New York Times Magazine article this Sunday that talked about teacher education. 410-319-8888. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, call 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're here with Nancy Grasmick, who is our state school superintendent. Number here is 410-319-8888. We're going to come back to the phones in just a minute. April, hold on, and we'll get to your call. But I do want to raise this issue because we have only like 13 or 14 more minutes with you, Nancy, before I know you have to go off to a meeting, and we're going to hear from Vincent Thomas, an incredible dancer from University from Towson State. But right now, the School Reform Act, I mean, one of the things, I mean, I can see the arguments around tenure. We don't have time to get into that, but I'm advancing it a year, and there are very few people, I think, are arguing about that. But the idea, two ideas, A, tying test results to teacher performance sounds a little, I mean, it sounds nice on paper, but given all the other influences that you have to deal with and other things that affect children, there's a real, some people say, a lack of fairness in that approach. And B, the biggest one for me is that people want to pay math teachers and other special teachers more than people who teach history and art and English. That makes no sense to me.
Okay, well, maybe I can comment on these two things. One, it would not be the only measure of a child's progress. We're just saying it would be one of the factors. It would be substantial. If you're saying 35%, I'm not saying that that's written in stone, 35 or 40%, but there would be multiple factors to evaluate that teacher. So that would be one of the factors, and that's sort of the direction we're being given. But it is a growth factor, and one of the big criticisms with No Child Left Behind was it was an absolute standard. So if you had a child who was an English language learner, how could you expect that child to make the same level of progress who's an immigrant child speaking no English as a child who's lived in this country all of his or her life? So it was an absolute standard. This is a growth factor. Where is that child when the child begins with that teacher? And what sort of progress has the child made when the child exits that teacher? So it's much more individualized. It is flexible. It is not about an absolute standard. I think that's fair. I think that's one of our huge criticisms with No Child Left Behind. In terms of the compensation, we're basically saying the system would have to decide. In some systems, like Montgomery County, there's no problem with math and science teachers, but there are problems with special education teachers. They have to determine what are their critical needs, and then how are they going to compensate those teachers to get to answer that issue of critical need.
But other than the point of trying to bring teachers into a system, what's the logic and justification for paying any specialty more than another?
Because we have in Maryland, I can just tell you where we are now. We have more than 90% of our teachers who teach in core subject areas who are considered highly qualified teachers. We're among the worst states in the nation in the distribution of those teachers to the most challenging schools.
But we don't have a state system. We have individual systems.
That's correct. So, and nothing has prodded a big change in that regard. And so this is a thought that may be incentives, and they may not all be financial incentives. They may be more assistance. They may be more planning time. There are a whole lot of other things to be considered. But that we would offer some of these incentives to teachers and principals who are outstanding to go into some of these challenging schools. And you know, I did this several years ago. I had what I called a distinguished principal program. And I asked principals, outstanding principals from around the state, to come into Baltimore City. And I can tell you, at Brems Lane Elementary, just using one example, that school was so underperforming. And with that principal there 3 years, that school made every state standard.
Well, that leaves a quick question. Call us up so I can get them fast enough. Please join us back. I'll probably get you right back in. 410-319-8888. I want to hear your thoughts. The woman was calling in about teacher compensation. If you call back in, I'll get you right on and interrupt myself. 410-319-8888 as we talk with Nancy Grasmick. But you, along with a number of the leaders of state school systems in the country, are talking about setting standards in math and other areas that you think should be national standards. So if you take that idea, along with what you're describing now is where teachers could go to teach where the needs are, let's say in like a state of Maryland, do you think that that means that local boards and local control of schools on that level is an outdated idea, that we need to think of, is part of your proposal on the superintendents, that that has outlived its usefulness in this country?
I don't really think so, but I do think there's a balance. I think this nation, and I've had opportunity to serve on the National Academy of Sciences Board, and I do think America's competitiveness in many ways is in jeopardy. I do think we need to have some standards that have international benchmarks associated with them. That does not deny the fact that we need that every school system is the same. It is not the same, and one size does not fit all. I think we have goals that are reflected in these Common Core standards, but they are very large grain, and we're going to have to drill down in each individual school system and certainly at the state level to make them usable for teachers. So I don't have a problem with the balance. And also to say that every system is different. What is true for Baltimore City is not necessarily true for Garrett or Allegheny County.
How are they different for you, from your perspective? When people say that, what is that? What's the substance of that?
Well, I think we have a higher level of children who come from circumstances of economic poverty in Baltimore City. We have children who have much more mobility. They move from school to school in the city. That is not an unusual occurrence. In Garrett County, they don't do that. The schools are very distant from each other. There's not the mobility factor, et cetera. So, and yet they have whole schools of Amish children. I don't see that in other jurisdictions.
So when you look at our school system here and you think about school systems around the world, many like in France and others in other countries are really national systems where schools get equal funding all mm-hmm. over the country, and there are standard curriculums or standard mm-hmm. standards that have to be met. If not a curriculum, at least standards that have to be met. We just talked about during the break that the fact that Kansas City has said they're going to close half of their schools. I mean, unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Imagine if any jurisdiction in Maryland decided to close half their schools because they couldn't afford to keep them open. So, but is that a trend? Is that – that's a pretty frightening thought. If California's school system is plummeting because they don't have money to fund their school system, Kansas City closes half their schools, Baltimore's facing very tough budget restrictions. We're seeing maybe Baltimore City could lose a lot of money in the state legislature beyond education. So, I mean, these are kind of trends that we have to address. I'm curious what your thoughts about how we address these things.
Well, I do think that's true, but I think we have a funding formula in the state of Maryland, and given the circumstances, the economic circumstances of other states, and there are probably very significant reasons why Maryland is not as bad off as other states because of government work, because of our high aerospace industry, biomedical industries here. So I would say, and because our funding formula is inverse to wealth, so the poorer jurisdictions get the most state money. And that is not going to change.
Now, we have a situation that this is not about Maryland. And we only have a few minutes left here before we have to take a break. But Rhode Island just fired an entire staff of a school. The president said it was fine. Arne Duncan said it was fine. Diane Ravitch came out and just blasted it, saying this is just a ridiculous way to handle that situation. What are your thoughts about that?
My thought is it's a ridiculous way to handle this situation. I can't imagine that in that large high school you could not find outstanding teachers. So the circumstances are such that in some ways they couldn't perform. Where there's some poor teachers, there probably were. But it should have been handled on a differentiated basis. But to go in and make a big statement and we're firing everybody, I think is such a disincentive for anyone to want to go into this profession. And it's totally unfair, in my opinion.
Now, I wish we had more time because I would love to hear your thoughts. I'm sure you read the article in New York Times Magazine about Lamov's way of looking at teacher education and finding that this marrying art and science and spending all this time going around the country interviewing best teachers for best practices and creating some really interesting stuff. I kind of pulled all the stuff out beyond the article. Have you read that? And you're familiar
yes,
with his
I have.
Work?
Yes.
So what are your thoughts about this kind of new way of thinking about how we can do very simple things to create great teaching?
I actually agree with it. I think we've been in too much of a lockstep approach. I think we haven't. I'm a big proponent of the arts and how the arts promote student achievement and satisfaction of learning for students. So I'm very excited about the idea that we would figure out new ways. And I also think we need to figure out new ways of preparing our teachers. Teacher education needs to be reformed.
Nancy Grasmick, it is always a pleasure to have you in the studio. I know you got to run to a meeting. We have another guest coming in, and we look forward to having you back here again.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity
to
speak with your audience and with you.
And next week, I think we'll be lucky enough to have Diane Ravitch on the air with us, and we'll hear her thoughts on education as well. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. When we return from this very brief break, we're going to be joined by Vincent Thomas, who is a professor of dance at Towson State University, is having a unique performance in two weekends in Baltimore, bringing dance alive in this town where that really needs it. So stay tuned for that. Don't go away. We'll be right back.